NDPA presents the Water Safety Champion Podcast.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to season two of the NDPA Water Safety Champion Podcast. A little bit of a different title we're coming back with this year. We originally launched this podcast as the NDPA Water Safety Podcast and had our first season. We had a few guest hosts, which we're going to revisit one of those guest hosts here in episode two of this season's podcast. A little bit more on that coming up. But this new podcast is reformatted to really focus on our water safety champions around this country. And we're going to invite them on to share their water safety story. What got them involved in water safety? Why are they so passionate about it? And we're going to learn a little bit more about the names behind water safety that you see around the country. But one other change that's going to be happening with our relaunch of our podcast for season two is I'm going to be joined by a series of co-hosts throughout the season. And one of our first co-hosts is joining me today, and I'm so excited because she's like my sister in drowning prevention. Welcome Alyssa Magrum to the podcast. Hi, Alyssa.
Hey. Hi. Thank you for having me. This is fun.
Well, thanks for agreeing to be a co-host. And I will give a little snippet that someone you are also very familiar with in digital platforms is going to be serving as a co-host a little bit later on in the season. You might actually join us for maybe a three panel host sometime. And that's going to be the other half of the Water Safety Odd Couple, Alan Korn.
Yes.
So I love joining forces and doing that. But Alyssa, I want to start off with, I mean, the whole premise of our new podcast and, you know, our structure is, you know, really celebrating our water safety champions and learning more about who they are. And, you know, yourself, you know, me, some other folks, you know, I think so many people in water safety see us all the time, right? But they may not actually know our background. So with kicking off episode one, I kind of want to learn your water safety story. How did you get started in this space? And what's kept you in it so long?
Sure. I'm happy to share mine. And it is true, because I think that everyone in this business or in this world has one. And I often think that people don't actually think about what it is until they're asked the question. So I love that we're going to get to ask the question. So thank you for asking me the question. And my water safety story really began in June of 2008. My water story and my association and my love for water began as a child. And I'll start with that and then go into the water safety part, because I think that's really important.
Yeah, I think that is really important, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's not just the water safety story. So many of us, I'm going to be the same way, had an affiliation with water prior to coming into water safety.
Yeah, and I think actually, if you asked any person walking down the street or I asked a bunch of kids in an event, college kids today in an event, what their water story was. And mine, I grew up around water. I grew up swimming. I was a diver. We went to the beach. I loved water. I felt more comfortable in water. I don't know. I had to ask my mom if I actually had swimming lessons, and she couldn't even remember. Like, we were like, I've always known how to swim. I'm sure at some point we couldn't even dig that up, but either way, I've loved water, and to the point where I live by a lake. But my water safety, and I'm a triathlete, I'm an open water swimmer. I don't love to swim laps in the pool, but I do it multiple days a week, because it's harder to get in the open water. I stand up paddleboard, all those things. So I'm a lover of water. In June of 2008, my daughter Ella was three and in preschool, and I received a phone call from the owner of her preschool. And he said, "Alyssa, I know you work with a lot of social workers, because in my previous career, I worked with a lot of social workers and counselors." And he said, "We had a student drown yesterday and our teachers are a mess. We need help. Can you send some social workers over to debrief the staff?" And I had a parental wake up call, a human wake up call in that moment of, wow, okay, first of all, I need to help him and get some people over there to help with the situation. And then I looked at my three-year-old Ella at the time and said, okay, she can swim across the swimming pool, we go to the lake, but I have not really thought about water safety or drowning prevention as something in my parental toolbox. Like, I'm a bike rider, so we've always had bike helmets on. I mean, you don't get near a bike without a bike helmet on, and car seats and all the other the plugs and the electrical outlets and all the latches on the things and all of the those things I thought about, but I really had never consciously thought about water safety.
Was it, and you know, we're going to hear this phrase come up through the podcast a number of times, so I'm just going to toss it out there. It's the I didn't know factor, right? And it sounds to me like
I didn't know, or I didn't even think to know. Like it's for me, it goes like, I look back and I'll talk a little bit about this. Like I tried to trace my behaviors as a parent before Colin was Colin Holst was the 4-year-old who drowned in a lifeguard pool here in Austin. And that began my water, his drowning, began my water safety story as a parent. And then ultimately, you know, Colin drowned in June of 2008, his family, Jeff and Jana Holst, started Colin's Hope 3 months after he drowned because they learned the statistics. They learned that they had lost their 4-year-old son to something that was preventable. And I started volunteering. And so I volunteered and then ultimately became the executive director and served in that role for almost 13 years. And I'm now an advisor to Colin's Hope. But that was a really interesting thing because I started looking at what did I do? Like, what were my behaviors around water prior to Colin drowning? As a parent and as a person, as an adult, like, and then what did I do after? And I, we actually, Jessica Brown and I did a presentation at the NDPA conference 2 years ago or two things ago, where we looked at, she has a 5-year-old now, and I have an almost 18-year-old, and we looked at and compared our parenting. And I could find pictures of Ella from the moment she was in the lake, because we live by the lake, and she was wearing a life jacket. So I know prior to Colin drowning, I did put my child in a life jacket in open water. Yeah. And I did get in the water with her in the pool. So I was within arm's reach all the time. So I know that I did that. And that was just a natural thing for me, probably because I spent so much time around water. But then I watched my own pictures of myself as an adult after Colin's drowning and after learning about the drownings of adults in open water and all of those things. And I suddenly saw it shift where I used to jump off the bridge, the low water crossing bridge, and I would jump off docks into the lake. And I wasn't wearing a life jacket. I was doing handstands and off the dock prior to Colin drowning. And my water safety story shifted because you will not see me touch an open body of water on my stand-up paddleboard unless I'm swimming for distance and I have an orange buoy attached to me that's floating, that's a safety device. You will not see me get near the lake without a life jacket on my body, not just on my stand-up paddleboard. And that is my water safety story has been impacted by Colin's drowning, my parenting, everything. I mean, I don't like to go to certain types of water anymore because I'm constantly on guard or on watch. And it's been so interesting because I think everyone, like we were saying, everyone has a water story. Like, how were they, did they have access to it? Did they learn to swim? What was their family structure like? Was there fear in their family? So they're kept away from the water. Did they go to the water? Did they, all of those things. And that plays into their water story. And then the water safety story for me drastically changed. And it was because of a drowning. It was because of a drowning of a 4-year-old classmate of my daughter's. And then became the fire hose of the families that I've had the honor to work alongside through Families United to Prevent Drowning. And sadly, almost 100 families. And then carrying those stories with me and the impact of that on my emotional self and feeling the responsibility to do this work. I mean, I feel incredibly responsible to do this work. And it's interesting because I'm just transitioning out of my executive director role. And I was trying to figure out, what am I going to do for a job? Like, I need a full-time job. I'm going to apply for all these jobs. And I start applying for jobs that are outside of the water safety world. And then I stopped because I realized, I'm like, I can't be done with this space. Like, once I get out of this space into a different job, I can't have my feet in both buckets. Right. And feel like it's, so I'm like, I'm not done because this is my water safety story is so deep. Now.
So I want to ask you a question, and I think this is probably going to be a theme as we have this discussion through the next couple months with the podcast is, What do you think drives that passion for water safety personally for you? I think you may have answered it with probably with the families, but I'm curious because it's kind of like I have my own reasons why I'm passionate and love this subject, and I'm sure we'll get that at some point. But
yes, because I'll ask you that question.
I figured you might, but you know, I'm curious because everyone I see a trend that comes into this space, you know, it's important, but it's also, I sense this like passion with everyone, and it's kind of hard to step away from it. Like, I can't envision myself doing anything but water safety.
Yeah, I think for sure it's a lot of the families I know for a long time, and still it's the responsibility and the dedication to helping create Colin's legacy and working alongside his family. And they gave me the, you know, honored me with the, I feel with the responsibility of helping create that legacy and doing that and educating anyone, parents, caregivers, children to be safer around water. It's, for me, it was like, it became a responsibility that I took on and I owned because I'm like, I know. So it's that whole thing of like, I know all this stuff. So if I know this stuff, I feel irresponsible to not communicate it to everyone, whether it's someone that I see in a parking lot or at the lake or at the pool. So part of it was responsibility. Part of it was because I do have the knowledge, feeling like I have the knowledge. So let me help. I'm a helper. I like to help. And then for sure, it's working alongside these families. If they can lose or almost lose the loved one to a drowning or an entrapment, and they're in this space, then I want to be in this space too. And I want to help share their stories and share their courage and help scaffold them up. Because I think it's interesting, a part of my role in this space has been some on the emotional support side of like, I'm a empath. I'm like, you get these stories in deep and you want to be, you know, part of the thing that moves the needle, part of the things that has makes sure that families don't end up in Families United to Prevent Drowning. So it's so many things. And I know for me, it's I lost the exact words of your question, but what another thing that drives me is that I love the water. And if you were looking, if we were on a visual podcast, and you know, I have water-related tattoos on my body. I mean, like, I spend a lot of time in the water, swimming, stand-up paddling, whatever. And like, because I love the water, but then I've also been dealing with death in the water. It's like this water is a healing thing and a joyous thing and a place of calm for me. And at the same time, it's a place that's dangerous. And I mean, I had my own, you've heard my story, and we don't have time to tell it now, but my own story of almost drowning in a triathlon a few years ago in Hawaii. And I had my own, like, it's that water is danger, respect the water. And so I think the whole balancing it out is a huge piece of my water safety story. So that's enough about me. Like, what is your water safety story? Because I know some pieces of it, but.
So I just have to toss out, because many of you know Allison Petrie that works for NDPA and also for Abby's Hope. Allison did a little research on me a while ago and figured out. So I think, you know, I've been awarded the Aquatics International Power Award twice. And I thought everyone forgot about that first one. That was like when I was in college, and it was like, it was cool. It was like the next generation of aquatic leaders, right? And it was really touching that they saw me as a college student and was like super interested in this. But it started out that Adam was a water baby, and Allison will not let me love that or live that down. And where
T-shirt
came
with fuzzy letters or glittery letters with that on the back. Get ready.
I know, right?
I have a heat press. I can make it happen.
But you know, it started. I mean, I lived a kind of a water centric life as a kid, right? Like, now mind you, I'm from Western Pennsylvania, so it's not like, you know, going to the ocean every day, but grew up in a community that had fabulous access to natural water, lakes. We had great community pools and a variety of different pools in different areas to choose from. Swimming lessons at the Y, at, you know, two or three different community pools. So I lived that life. Now, did I ever think my career would be in aquatics? No. I'll tell you what, honestly, I kind of left that, you know, space. Was a teenager, was a power lifter, wrestler, football player. Was not your typical like swimming kid per se. And I always wanted to be a lifeguard. So when I was in ninth grade, the high school was offering a lifeguarding class in the evenings and on the weekends. And I'm like, okay, I'll give it a shot. And I almost drowned taking the prerequisite test. I remember the instructor looking at me going, yeah, this isn't
What
going.
part? The five, the what part?
It
The
was the
swim, the
five, it was the
breaststroke?
500-yard swim at that
Yeah.
point. And I did it. I had the endurance, but it wasn't pretty per se, because
Pretty,
I
yeah.
wasn't a refined swimmer at that point. I've never worked so hard at something in my life over those 12 weeks, because, and it was great, because now so often lifeguarding classes are just 2 weekends. So I would have never passed if that was the model. It was like 12 Wednesday nights for 3 hours. So over those 12 weeks, I mean, I lived and breathed that lifeguard manual. I practiced, I got my swimming ability up. So I was super proud to get that lifeguard cert. Then I was like, oh, I'm never going to work at a community pool. Well, like 2 summers later, I decided I wanted to work at a community pool as a lifeguard. So started that, quickly became head lifeguard and then the pool manager. And then I was just like hooked. I just love that environment. I love being around the pool, the summer, swim lessons, everything about it. So I went home one day. I was going to go for journalism. I had interned at a TV station for like 4 years at that point in my life. And then I went home and told my parents, well, instead of going to Penn State for journalism, I'm going to go to Slippery Rock University because they have an aquatics program as part of their PE teacher certification. My dad didn't know what to say. He was just, I mean, I think he was a little concerned, frankly, about me going into journalism. But when I said, no, I want to just do this lifeguarding thing, it went totally to a different side. But they let me do it and, went to Slippery Rock. And that's where, at the time, it was like 2010. Bob O'Gorick was a professor at Slippery Rock. He still is, but he was president of NDPA. And we happened to be hosting the conference in Pittsburgh that year. So that was my first introduction to drowning prevention. At that point, I was a lifeguarding instructor, water safety instructor. I was living and breathing it, but from a really like different lens, more from like park and recreation side, the operation side. So I knew water safety, but then when I attended the conference for the first time, that was the first time I ever met a family who had lost someone to a drowning.
Powerful.
And actually it was Blake and Kathy Collingsworth. And it was just a couple years after Josh had drowned. And you could just sense the rawness of it, and how much they wanted to change this. And that got me really further investigating drowning as an issue. And I knew I wanted to go on for a master's degree, so my career path had not changed at this point. I wanted to be an aquatics director, not at a high school at this point, but at a university. So went on to do my master's, and that's when I kind of got introduced to research. And I obviously this was my interest area, so I'm like, well, I'm going to do my research in water safety and lifeguarding. And then I got into like, oh my God, there's not a lot of research in this area. And I fell in love with research on a whole different lens. And that got me on to doing a PhD. And I dedicated my whole research side to water safety and drowning prevention. And I would say that I'm just going to go ahead and answer the kind of passion thing for me and why I see my. I find drowning as an issue so fascinating, because it from a research lens, it's a phenomena that's happening in society, right? It's a very traumatic phenomena where, we're losing kids, teenagers, adults to this issue that's completely preventable. But it's such a difficult problem to solve because there's so many variables at play. There's, yes, it's the government involvement and the research, and we need the nonprofit organizations and the swim instructors and the facilities. Everyone has that role. I think that's why I love NDPA as an alliance. We get to all come together for that. But it's challenging because I use this example. I took a phone call from a grandfather this summer who lost his granddaughter to a drowning in his backyard pool. Granddaughter was coming to visit for the week. He lived, I believe, in Florida. And he was proactive. He put a pool fence up because he knew his young granddaughter was coming. Well, she ended up drowning, I think, on the second or third day of the visit because the landscaper left the pool gate open. And he called me wanting to know, like, well, what didn't I do? What else could I have done to address this? And there's so many. That's why we talk about those layers, right? Because layers fail. And here's this, devastated family who had just lost, one of the youngest members of their family to this issue. And they even thought about it, right? They were proactive with it, but it still wasn't enough. So I think the problem, and honestly, so much of what we need to accomplish in this country, it's sad to say we haven't accomplished it yet. But I think, you know, you and I, this will probably also come up, is there's been so much, I guess, renewed energy in water safety is the best way to put it over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years. I'm just so excited that of what we're achieving right now and what we're going to achieve in the next decade.
Yeah, and it's interesting you said renewed energy, and I am feeling a total, like, it's, to me, it's not renewed. To me, it's new. Like, this is, I've been in this space almost 15 years, and it is so exciting. Another reason why I was like, I can't get out of this now. Like, we're just about to have a National Water Safety Action Plan, and we're working on forming a Texas Water Safety Coalition that's going to function. And we've got a Central Texas Drowning Prevention Action Team. And we've got, like, there's so much happening. And it's like, finally the time, like, there's going to be some, you know, you and I have a million ideas of stuff that we would do if we had unending dollars to do it, because
we could probably just have a podcast all about that, to tell you the truth.
The big ideas. Like, I know I have, you've heard my big idea of having a water safety corps, like an AmeriCorps program that is focused purely on water safety instructors, lifeguards, and water safety ambassadors. But anyway, like, I am excited about the possibilities of reaching people who have not thought this was something they need to think about, because I know that another side tangent that I have thought about, you're talking about research, and I'm also a research nerd. You have the PhD, I don't, but I have a very big fascination and belief in evaluation and program evaluation. One of the things that is like a hot button for me is, like, we need to do a better job in this field of evaluating what we're doing, because if we do the same thing over and over again, but we're not evaluating to see if we're actually making an impact, then we're not doing this industry a service. But there's interesting stuff. I'm about to work on a project with someone around helping them figure out how to evaluate their program in long-term longevity in terms of retention of knowledge, and that stuff. It's so exciting. So I'm just, you've got the renewed energy, and I feel like there's a whole bunch of new energy. And I think
it's
both all just sort of coming together into a perfect storm to actually get the attention of funders, get the attention of legislators. I mean, I know there's so much happening in, you know, we could talk about, and hopefully this podcast will talk about all people in all of those industries and places.
Yeah. And I can't stress the evaluation is so needed, because I got approached maybe about a year ago with the idea of, you know, doing like a Washington, D.C. lobbying effort, you know, where we would mm-hmm. bring a lot of water safety advocates from across the country in and to go talk to their Congress, you know, people, senators in their offices about water safety. And it's a great idea, right? But, you know, I know what the next question is from a legislator, right? What do you want me to do about
it? What do we do? Right? Yeah.
And I what concerned me with that is I don't know that we had a defined ask at that mm-hmm. point. And the other thing too is, you know, oftentimes you pointed it out, so many programs, so many things have been happening, but do we actually know that they're effective, right? Through an evaluation lens. And oftentimes that's what policymakers want to know. Like, if I'm going to put public money behind something, is it actually going to work?
Is it going to work?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's what funders want to know. That's what me as a donor to an organization, like, that's one of the first questions that I ask is, like, well, is my money going to do something, or am I, you know? And I think that's a really valid and important question. And it is very, very hard in prevention work. I mean, that's a whole nother thing of, like, so what can you measure? Because we don't get to hear all about the ones we save. We might hear anecdotally, you know, qualitative data around, you know, my child, you know, I recognize the signs of drowning because I read this water safety card. And so therefore, whatever, or you hear those, or, you know, we got a life jacket from the life jacket loaner station, and, you know, whatever it is, we hear those stories, but they're, you know, you don't hear all the ones that you saved. You just have to believe in that. And that's hard.
You know, look, the what does success look like? Question is something I'm often asked. And, you know, in so many industries, it's a hard question to answer. Sometimes people, you know, in my opinion, sometimes people overthink it. Sometimes people mm-hmm. underthink the answer to that question. I think it's hard in drowning prevention because, you know, you already pointed out we don't hear about the lives saved. We just hear about the tragedies, right? And it's hard to weigh prevention efforts against, you know, expected, you know, death numbers every summer, something like
Right.
that. It's almost impossible. So we have to look at different metrics and different ways of evaluating what we're doing. Is it successful? And that's not the easiest thing, especially when you're dealing, it's going to sound like a horrible research term, but like a multivariable issue like this, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, because one
And it
drowning,
costs money. It costs money.
it
I mean,
does.
that's the thing too. It's like the people that want to give the funding, but they want you to prove it, but you have to have the money to do the research. And it's like the chicken before the egg and all of those things. And
Cart
but I
before the
do
horse,
think we're
maybe something
seeing,
like that.
yeah.
Yeah.
But I do see, you know, we see the CDC got money for the first time last, you know, fiscal year or whatever, and it's looking at an increase. And so those things, it feels really exciting and it feels really hopeful. Like I have hope that we are making progress. And I know there's a lot of frustration out there of people that have been in it or families that lose a child now and they say, what the hell is happening? Why didn't I know? And that question. And that is a bit of a beatdown when you have been trying to do this work for so long and you're like, but we are making progress. I do believe that. I believe that the level of conversations or the number of conversations that are happening or the people that are actually paying attention or that it is in the forefront of their mind or, you know, I do think we're making progress. I have to stay in that place of having some hopefulness because otherwise it's a beatdown. I mean, this is
It
not easy
is.
work. Like, this
Yeah.
is not easy work. Emotionally, like we're scrapping for resources to gather resources to pay to do the work. I mean, there is not a ton of funding out there. So if anybody's listening that wants to keep on putting money, like put money to this cause because we have energy and experts that are wanting to do the work, but we have to have dollars to back it up.
But you know, I think what stands us so set up for success, and this is going to sound really goofy to some people, but it is our scrappiness. And I think that's what's going to lead us to have ultimate
Yep.
success because you know, it's funny. I'm often asked like, well, how were you guys able to do this project with very limited funding, right? And it's like, well, we were scrappy with it. We built it over time. We did certain elements to it,
Yep.
whatever the approach is. But what I found is as more money becomes available, we're able to achieve more because we keep that mindset of we're not wasteful, we need to
Oh.
spend every dollar. And where I see some causes where it's like unlimited amounts of money, you get in the neighborhood. It's kind of like, you know, why does the government spend, you know, I don't know, the example's like $1,200 on a toilet seat? Well, because that's what they're used to doing, right? You
Yeah.
know, we're used to operating scrappiness. And I think that actually makes us very
Oh,
well set up to do this.
and you have to be creative. You have to be innovative. You have to be able to pivot. Like I feel like I can pivot on a dime. If you tell me we did with COVID, like we literally at Collins Hope, we pivoted within 12 hours. We took everything virtual when COVID hit. I mean, you have to, I think there's a lot of that energy in this space, which is so exciting. And I do think that we have a depth of field, like we're starting to have a depth of field in the water safety space, meaning there are more people becoming experts in whatever the, you know, issue area is. And as we gain partners with alliances and collaborations, we have a deeper, you know, bench, so to speak, or a deeper, you know, our starting
Well,
team is getting more and more solid.
I'm seeing the collaboration too. And, you know, for a long time, it kind of felt, I even felt this way too, that everyone was competing against each other in the water safety space. And I'm not even saying just on, you know, the local level per se, but even the national level, there was almost a perception. It wasn't reality, but there was a perception that no one worked together. And,
Right.
you know, that was really a false perception, I will say. I mean, it's never like, you know, major organizations were tooth and nail fighting each other in this space, right? But I see much more intentional collaboration happening right now, like the US Action Plan, like Water Safety USA. I mean, my God, every week it feels like I have an introduction to a new partner or organization
Partner.
working in this space that, yeah.
Well, I want to give you some credit where credit is due on a lot of that happening because of your willingness to step into conversations. And some of them are tough conversations. Some of them are conversations that say, why are we operating against each other in this space? Let's sit down. And I've watched you develop in your role at NDPA and not be afraid to have those conversations. And I want to say that out loud, because it's incredible leadership to be able to say, you know, like, we're going to get in the room and talk about it. I mean, you and I have talked for years about wanting to put people that are on different sides of certain issues in water safety in a room together and have those conversations, because that is what has to happen for us to be able to work together and to get out of our silos, get out of our echo chamber of talking only to ourselves, and get this out into the open. And I mean, I think I'm super hopeful that there's a lot of energy, there's a lot of expertise, and we're starting to get attention. The cause is starting to get the attention it deserves.
Well, and I think too, and thank you for the compliment, but I always say it's a team effort. I mean,
I know it's a team effort, but it does take leaders. And I want you to acknowledge you in that leadership space. So,
well, thank you. Welcome. I mean, you deserve the same thing there, because you've been, you know, right along in this mix. I mean, to me, and I think you agree with this, it's, we're not going to solve this problem in silos by ourselves. Mm-mm. And, you know, we do need that open collaboration. And I mean, I'll tell you, like, even right now, some of the things we're talking about with like the U.S. Action Plan is, okay, how do we strategically get people to work together on solving some of the things the action plan's going to bring forward, right? Because we can't just toss it out saying, well, this is a problem and we need to fix it, but
someone do it
up, right? Like, we need strategy, but we need that willingness to kind of, it can be a dirty phrase sometimes, but work across the aisle, like figure out how, you know, I always say, like, we're always like 90% aligned in water safety. It's that 10% we struggle with, but that 10% sometimes prevents us from working together on the 90% that we can agree on, that we can move forward on.
Or spending energy in that 10% that could be better served in, you know, in that, you know,
Well, I know we're going to run out of time for the first episode, and I could talk to you, like, it could just be literally just me and you bantering the whole time for the whole series. Maybe we start a secondary podcast on that, but I want to ask you a question I ask every guest, which is, and this is going to be hard for you to answer because it would be equally as hard for me to answer.
You have to answer it too, right?
I guess I'm going to have to now. Okay. I give you a magic wand. You can change, you know, one thing. No, doesn't matter, money, structures, what it could be. What would you change in water safety to move us forward?
That is a hard question. And you even told me that you were going to ask it, and it's still a hard question. or a version of it. I think I would want every person to have equal access to education, knowledge, and skills. And so that means education about just water safety, access to water competency and swimming lessons, like equal access, because it should never be that one fracture or part of the population has all this accessible, you know, they know that they need to be thinking about drowning prevention. They know that it's an issue and they can get swimming lessons. And so if I could wave the magic wand, because I do global work also outside of the US. And so I want this solution to be for everybody, is that, you know, everyone would have access to equal parts of knowing that this is something they need to think about. And then having access to learning the skills in the water. So the in the water and the out of the water. I mean, I think that for me is would be totally unicorn magic.
Yeah. All right. My answer.
What about you?
And I asked the question. So yeah, this is still tough for me and I should have an answer to it, because like everything I would change, right? I think the one thing I would love to change is the I didn't know factor. Like I that's the thing that shocks me. I mean, I've done, I did a CNN interview once live on the air where I said the statistic, you know, and at the time it was drowning was the leading cause of injury related death for children 1 to 4. Mm-hmm. Now it's the leading cause of death overall for children 1 to 4. And the anchor was flabbergasted, like had no idea. And I mean, it kind of derailed the interview because it was kind of like what did you just say? And that's what I wish we could change, because I hear it from so many families who have lost a child, is the I didn't know drowning was leading cause of death. I didn't know the simple steps I could take. And you know, that's there's a whole, you know, world of work we need to do to just change that in the dynamic in the United States and make people recognize that this is a solvable problem. But as I always say, like, it's great to talk about, you know, action steps we can take, but we need to start even with awareness right now, right? Just making more people aware of the issue. So if I could wave a magic wand, everyone in the country would couldn't say the words, I didn't know anymore. So we're going to leave it there with episode one. Episode two, we're going to be joined by, I would call him a water safety champion, soon to be Dr. Will Kuhn, who is-
He is a water safety champion, a global water safety champion, have you?
Yeah, so Will's going to be joining us for episode two. So thank you for joining us for the first episode of the NDPA Water Safety Champion podcast. Thanks, Alyssa, to joining me for episode one. And I think you're going to be back for episode
two. Thank you for asking. Well.
So we'll see you on episode two. Be safe out there. And thanks for listening.